This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome to The Untold Story. I'm Martha McCallum, and today I'm joined by Benjamin Hall, our intrepid correspondent, war correspondent, reporter. Ben, hi.
Martha, nice to see you.
So, how are you?
Well, doing very well, thanks. Life is good. I feel healthy. I feel strong. And more importantly, I'm getting back to work. I'm doing more work, and that's really what makes me so happy.
I have to say, watching you walk around in this piece that you just did for Fox Nation, besides the incredibly stirring and revealing content, you're just getting around so well. And I'm just so grateful. It makes me like so happy.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, when you're recovering, you set yourself goals. And first to me, it was get out of hospital, get home. Then it was start walking well. But really, one of the big goals was, let's get back to reporting in the way I used to report so that I can be in the field. I can be talking to people face to face. And so this Israel special, these two specials, that was the first time I've done it, that I was able to walk around like that, back in the field, back telling stories. And so that's why it was a great moment.
You know, it's really incredible. And, you know, this is the untold story, this podcast. So I always like to dig into the personal side of it a little bit before we talk about these amazing pieces that you did. How's Alicia? How are your kids? And how, you know, now you're into sort of normal life, which is just a wonderful thing. But how's that all working?
Yeah, I mean, look, it is the untold story. And so I'm happy to be honest as well. You go through different phases. At the beginning, it is about recovery and getting home, and you are living in that one world. That's all you think about. But then there's this interesting period between when you get home and then you are segueing back into normal life that you're struggling to figure out what is normal anymore. Mm-hmm. There are many things I cannot do that I used to do, and it's still a learning process in terms of who I am, where I can go, what I can do. And so it's been an interesting transition. I would say that I'm just out the other side of that. I've just reached a point where I know exactly how my schedule can work, how far I can walk, how I can play with my children. You know, one of the big things was that I can't roll around on the floor. I can't carry them. I can't race with them in the park. I couldn't teach my youngest how to ride a bike. You know, I used to run alongside the others, the elder ones. So I've learned things I can do and I can't do those things. So that's what the journey is about. It's about realizing the things you can't do, but it's also about figuring the things that you now can do. And so it's been an adventure. And to be honest, it continues. And I expect it will continue for life.
Well, I mean, it's just it's an amazing, joyous part of your story. And we're also thrilled to see you back in action, because to me, I mean, you have so many gifts. You're talented in every aspect of the work that we do. But it's amazing to see you on location and doing these kinds of in-depth interviews. And I just want to start this by saying that I really hope that everybody will take the time to watch this special that Ben has just released, Surviving Hamas, given everything that's going on in this country. And this week we're covering a continuation of the protests that are happening on campuses across the United States. And one of the things that I was just working on for a segment that we're doing today was, you know, that students at Columbia are chanting, "We are Hamas." So I think it's important to remember, and obviously, you know, there are many layers and sides to all of these stories, but we have to remember what started this, at least this part of it. And your series begins with taking us back to the Supernova Music Festival and these jubilant young people who were just so excited to go to this concert with all of their friends. And you meet this young woman, Maya, but talk to us a little bit about about the beginning of this documentary and why it was so important to you to take people back to that early, early morning of October 7?
Well, first of all, the people standing on campuses shouting, "I am Hamas," have either never been educated about them. And what they don't realize is that living under Hamas, they are not allowed one of the single freedoms that they are then, you know, upholding over here. And it's a bizarre thing for them to say. And it's frankly, it forgets about the terror and the brutality and the horror that Hamas commits. And I suppose one of the purposes of the special, of what we filmed, was reminding people of that terror. It gets lost in so much mainstream media where people don't talk about that day, October 7th, anymore. And it wasn't something that happened on that day. It is something that continues. These hostages are still being held inside Gaza. You know, women, children, elderly, and the people that we speak to, you know, some of them are survivors. They're all survivors. They've either been released from Gaza or they were holding their doors shut on October 7th. But that's the one thing that they say is this isn't over, and it won't be over until hostages are released. And that's what we wanted to focus on, telling these frankly remarkable stories.
Talk to us a little bit about Maya. She is an extraordinarily strong young woman. And when I watched the two of you talking, she was shot in both of her legs. And it's just very moving, because I'm sure that when you walked into that room, Ben, she must have felt, this is a man who understands a little bit of what I'm going through physically.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons that she agreed to speak to us. You know, one of the people who was taking care of her, a therapist, was saying that it would be so great if she could see my injuries and see how I had come through them, and that she would be able to do the same, because we had very similar injuries in a sense. You know, her left foot was basically shot off. You know, they've kind of reattached it, but it's not done well. And she was badly injured in the other leg. And so when we sat and we talked to each other, part of what I was saying to her as well off camera was just, look, I know what that's like. I know what this recovery is like. And I'm standing here doing things I never thought I could do. And you will get there too. But she hasn't just gone through the physical injuries like I've gone through. She's gone through a lot more. She was held prisoner inside Gaza for 53 days and was not able to heal, was not able to see proper doctors. She saw one doctor who tortured her at one point. He was swinging her leg around. She was tortured by a teacher inside Gaza who was taking care of her at one point as well. So she's saying a doctor and a teacher from inside Gaza, these are the two people who should uphold society. They're there torturing me. What does that say about Gaza overall? But she was in the tunnels of Hamas. She at one point had a gun to her head, and the decision was, hop on my one leg despite the pain, or else I'm going to die. And the one message that I was so amazed at that she kept saying was that she knew, and again, I shared this from my experiences in Ukraine, she never thought she was going to die. She said to herself, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to find the strength to keep going. I will put the pain aside. I will push the people held in me. I will try to get more food. I will insist on speaking to my brother who's being held elsewhere. And that is a resilience that I'm so amazed at and that I saw in her. She never gave up, and she fought through some of the worst. But so she's a remarkable person, but she's the beginning of her journey of recovery. And you know, I know it'll take a while for her too.
Yeah. I mean, it is a stunning scene that she describes, when one of, you know, to be shot, to watch other people be brutally murdered in their cars, you're running, the entire area is surrounded at the musical festival. It's a nightmare that you can't even imagine, you know, being able to come up with in your worst dream. And then on top of it all, she and her brother and their friend are taken hostage, are thrown into a truck, driven through people who are cheering and happy. So the contrast between their nightmare and the happiness and jubilation that is all around them when they enter Gaza is sickening, Ben. And it's something I think that we all need to, you know, go back and remember in this story.
No, it is. And again, those words that she said that she was trying to hide when she was taken into Gaza. She was in a truck at the beginning. And the people with her, the Hamas members, took her by the hair and lifted her up and paraded her and showed her. And she just said to me that everyone was cheering and celebrating, like it was the best thing ever to see this young girl being tortured and taken prisoner. And it has to raise real questions about, you know, the mindset inside Gaza itself, and you know, how you can look ahead to rebuilding that place when you've got mentalities like that. But we also have, because she called her father, Maya called her father when she was being taken, and we have that audio and we play it in the special. You know, it's her father desperately trying to find out where she is. He's going to come and save her. And it is just heartbreaking to hear the screams and the terror in her voice as she's been taken, saying, "Daddy, help me. Please help me. They're taking me." So, I mean, and, you know, and for the father, and we've obviously interviewed the father as well, and special, and to hear his, you know, voices as well, saying what that was like, 53 days, not knowing where your daughter was, just harrowing stuff.
The Untold Story continues right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Absolutely. No, that audio is absolutely harrowing and unimaginable as a parent to feel. He must have just felt so completely helpless in this situation. And his daughter, understandably, you know, saying, "I'm going to call dad." You know, this is the logical reaction of this young woman. So tell us a little bit about some of the other people that we meet in this series, Ben.
Well, we also wanted to tell a story of one of the kibbutzes, and we picked one called Nir Oz. It's 2 kilometers away from the Gaza border. You know, you can see it. And we were down there and you can hear the shelling, you can hear the battle and the war inside Gaza. But this was the kibbutz. And a kibbutz is like a community, an Israeli community. They have quite a few of them spread out, small. Many people are raised there. They're born, raised there. And these are communities which many of them wanted to pursue peace. Nir Oz was a community that would, one of the ladies we spoke to, would go to the Gaza border, you know, over many years and drive sick Gazans to hospital in Israel most days. Mm-hmm. She wanted to go and help them. And here she was on October 7th, and they came in and they went door to door. And we spoke to a number of people. You know, a quarter of all people in that kibbutz, so 350 people, a quarter of them were killed or kidnapped, of a whole community. And, you know, we went into one house with a mother and her 3 nieces, the same age as my children, you know, 8 and 6, burnt to death. Her brother, sister, mother assassinated, you know, whole families totally taken away. And, you know, we move around this kibbutz and we tell different stories of it. And there's another story about these mother and daughter, Irit and Lotus, and they managed to find a way of locking their safe room door because they don't usually lock these safe rooms they had. They were made to prevent attacks from rockets. But she got on a chat group. She used her vacuum cleaner and she hooked it up against the door and she managed to hold it, the terrorists out. But she lay on the floor with her daughter and they said goodbye to each other and they hugged each other and cried. And they said what they thought about their lives. And, you know, Irit just said that she'd had the most wonderful life surrounded by the most wonderful daughter and they were going to heaven together. And this is the end of it. And just to picture that in your mind of them lying there with terrorists shooting at the door, trying to break in while a mother and daughter say goodbye to each other is just, you know, sent real shivers down me. And I will add on a personal note, I've reported and I covered this story in a different way to ones I ever did before Ukraine. I understand and I feel something differently emotionally. You know, when I heard a mother and a daughter saying that to each other, when I saw where the children were burnt alive, when I spoke to Maya, for the first time ever, I did a story where I knew what that was like. I've been to some of these places. I know the pain and it felt very different for the first time ever to go and tell these stories, knowing the horrors that they've seen up front. And I think you can kind of see that in the way that I report some of them. You know, I used to be really good at compartmentalizing. I'm going to conflict. I know where the fear is. I know what's dangerous. Let's think about it, plan it, know what we've got to do, and then put that to the side and go. And actually, I feel strangely a lot more emotionally connected to the stories, to these stories in particular. And so that was a really interesting part of the journey that we were talking about earlier. You know, that was a learning curve for me. And I left an interview with Maya, and I actually said, I was going to go meet someone. I said, you know, I actually need half an hour off right now. I've got to try and really think about that and go through it. So that was a really interesting experience for myself as well. But look, it's difficult to tell these stories. It might seem hard for people to want to tune into them and turn them on, but you have to. I think that's the message I also want to send, is you can't just turn your eyes. You've got to see what happened. You've got to see up close the victims of October 7th.
But that's and I think Maya is such a hopeful young woman. You know, you see her fighting. She says, I looked, you know, in the taken away by Hamas, and she said, I remember looking at the floor of the truck and thinking, I know that I'm gonna survive this. It was just this sort of very deep understanding that she had, that she knew this was not her death. This wasn't when it happens for her. And it's really, she's extraordinary, and the other characters in this story are too. You know, Ben, because you are, you know, such an even-handed reporter and you've covered so many conflicts around the world, what do you say to, you know, those who watch this and think also about what's going on with, you know, families in Gaza?
Yeah. And we spoke to every one of our guests about that as well. And, you know, how they felt about the death toll inside Gaza and the rising death toll. And like, there are mixed emotions. There isn't a single person who says, on Israeli side, we don't want a single innocent person inside Gaza to die. No one wants that. We know what that's like. But they in Israel really feel that they have to stop future attacks like this, that there is a hatred there inside Hamas that they need to stop, and they need to stop the terror from happening again. And so, look, they are conflicted over it, to be honest. You know, I mentioned Irit, who used to drive injured Gazans to hospital. She sadly said, I used to believe in peace and I knew we could work together. I no longer believe that. I think that the hope is gone. I've been shown on October 7th the hatred that they have, not just to me, but to every Jew and Israel. And they all say it loud and clear. We want to abolish that country. We want to abolish the religion. And she said, I don't think peace is possible again. And so, gosh, you want to talk of the damage that did. It wasn't just the people and the terrible stories of the people who were taken. There is a shift inside Israel about how can you have a relationship? How can you build a relationship once you've seen the horror that happened that day? And that's what's going to be really interesting, to see how they can rebuild it and what happens in the future.
Yeah. And Maya talks about that. She said she saw in their eyes that they felt if they killed a Jew, they would have a better life. And I think about the original video of October 7th, which I watched, and this young man who calls his parents, a Hamas terrorist calls his parents and is overwhelmed with excitement and glee, telling them that he killed 10 Jews and that they will be so proud of him. And I just, you know, hear his voice ringing in my ears when I cover these stories. It's just, it's an extraordinary mentality. And then you see what's happening across the country with these, you know, pro-Palestinian in many cases, but then there are also these voices within those, which we have video of, that are cheering, "We are Hamas," on Columbia's campus here in New York City, which is just, you know, just a stunning reality. Two things I want to ask you about before we go, Ben. And one is this report that Hamas now says, according to reports, with regard to the negotiations that are going on to return the hostages, that they have fewer than 20. And the number that they should have in terms of who's accounted for should be closer to 120 or 30.
Yeah, I believe 137 or so, I think. And I hadn't seen the 20 figure. I know a week ago it was at 40, and they said, we don't have 40. And that number coming down, you know, it was always interesting as to where they were being held. And we now know that some of the hostages were spread out, and Islamic Jihad had some. They were in so many different places. And Maya, in the interview I did with her, also says, you know, at one point her window was blown in because of some of the bombing. So, you know, it's hard to know how many are still alive, but certainly their position to negotiate, you know, is, has reached almost nothing at this point. But It's the families of the hostages, and we spoke to many of them as well. They just said they can only imagine and have to keep believing that their family members are alive. That's until they know otherwise. That's what they've got to believe until they have evidence otherwise. But yes, I think the number is really low.
Yeah. I mean, that just makes me hope and pray that they do eventually get the answer to that question. I mean, that could go on for a very long time, the not knowing. And you just hope for some resolution for some of these families. The Poland Goldbergs, we've spoken to many times. Their son Hirsch and other Americans who are in this situation as well. Last question. I was so struck by seeing this enormous Iranian ballistic missile lying on the beach on the Dead Sea, where I had the opportunity to go last June, and just seeing that enormous missile lying on the beach there. This dynamic has changed dramatically. So now you have Iran and Israel, you know, essentially at war. I mean, I don't know what else to call this that's going on between them now. What are your thoughts on that, Ben?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that you would say that they've technically been at war in some regard for quite a few years at this point. But this is the first direct attack from inside Iran and towards Israel. And yes, you see the size of these rockets. And many people were saying that, Iran fired the rockets and the missiles knowing they'd all be shot down. It was more of a message. But if you see some of these ballistic missiles that were being fired, 350, there's no doubt that they were aiming to kill and hit targets. You know, you don't just fire these things off.
They had to have figured that at least 25% of them were going to make it through, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And quite a few of those didn't work well, which shows luckily Iran's, you know, capabilities is not perfect. But it does also show, for example, I know we say that they were all shot down, but a lot of those were shot down not just by Israel, but they needed the help of the US, the UK, France, the Jordanians, and the Saudis actually allowed planes to cross through. So two things from that. One is that Israel does need help in defending itself. On a massive barrage like that, you know, it does need its allies around it to do so. But those allies are really fascinating. What I think we've also seen is a growing relationship between Israel and some neighboring states, Gulf states, Jordan, Saudi. And that's really fascinating. And if you want to look for any kind of optimism for the future, I would say that, you know, Saudi Arabia, say what you will about MBS, the leader, but they have real plans for the future. They're looking at an economic, wealthy area. The Jordanians, well, they definitely need that because their economy is doing so badly anyway. And so I think that that could be the basis for something positive. You know, if you took the Iranian regime out of this, I think that, and look, it could be on the back of the Abraham Accords as well. Like, there were some real advances and you know, relationships were built that President Trump did. That's where we've got to look. It might seem that everything is terrible, but if you look at that, like, at those allegiances, then perhaps there's something positive that can come out of that.
Yeah, it's possible that this move and escalation isolates Iran further in the region by drawing these other Gulf states and Israel and U.S. support together. I think that it's a really interesting
on a bigger picture. On a bigger picture, what it does is pushes Iran in towards Russia, China, North Korea.
Yes,
so then you start Then you have two big, you know, power opposite each other. So that's a worry as well. So no, we're at a really interesting point right now, both in the Middle East as well as around the world. I think we're seeing more conflicts than ever, and I do not see those stopping. We will continue to see pop-ups, little things here, escalations, attacks, and it only takes one to go really wrong. You know, imagine a U.S. embassy getting hit in a country. Something like that escalates really quickly. So look, there are positives. We've got to look at those positives, but we are very close to something potentially erupting as well. So very fine point right now that the administration also has to look closely at.
Well, Ben, thank you so much. It's an amazing series. Fantastic interviews. It's called Surviving Hamas, a Benjamin Hall series, and it's two parts on this recent drop of the work that Ben has been doing. And Ben, it's so wonderful to see you back out there and doing so well and moving so well and all of it. So congratulations to you and continued good health, and we will keep in touch. Thanks so much, Ben.
Thanks, Martha. Thanks for having me on.
That's the Untold Story for today. I'm Martha McCallum. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to The Untold Story with Martha McCallum. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Make sure to rate and review. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with the Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.